The eve of polling in the US presidential election, and still the insults and the scaremongering continue. In his final rallies at the weekend, Donald Trump told supporters in Pennsylvania, Democrats are demonic. He should never have left the White House, and he wouldn't mind if a gunman aimed at him and also shot through the fake news. Kamala Harris, fresh from her turn on Saturday Night Live, told a black church in Detroit that the nation was ready to bend the arc of history towards justice, urging people to turn the page and write the next chapter in American history. A poll in the state of Iowa has gained attention, particularly because it put Harris polling strongly with women voters. But who will be in the Oval Office when the next chapter of American presidential politics is written? Tomorrow, Americans go to the polls. Professor Thomas Gift is director of the Centre on US Politics, University College London. Professor Gift, good morning. Welcome to Morning Ireland.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
So Democrats and optimists, or maybe that should be optimistic, Democrats are looking to this Iowa poll to suggest that, if not a swing, a move or a mood by undecideds to Kamala Harris. Do you share that mood of an uptick, or is this an outlier?
Well, I don't know if it's an outlier, but I still think it's so close that we really can't make any clear predictions. If you look nationally, the polls are about 50-50. Of course, what matters most is key swing states. And in every single swing state, the difference is within the margin of error between Trump and Harris. Prediction polls have a slight advantage to Trump. It's about 57 to 43. But still, we're basically talking about a coin toss at this point.
Do you share a view at all that the pollsters have been running shy in this election in terms of the interpretation of the data?
Well, you know, I think it's good for pollsters to acknowledge the uncertainty that surrounds polls. There's just a lot that polls can tell us, but a lot that they can't tell us, and all of them are imperfect. Generally, the best measures aggregate multiple high-quality polls, but what constitutes high quality is often in the eye of the beholder. I mean, we saw in 2016, for example, many of the polls significantly undercounted Trump support. Some of these polls have tried to weight different demographic groups to account for that. But, you know, I'm not sure. I understand why polls don't want to kind of get out ahead and take a clear stand. But if the data are showing what they're showing, that's basically all they can reveal.
What do you think about the style of campaigning by both candidates in the weeks leading up to polling? You know, he's been in sort of grievance politics mode, a dark mood, people say, this thing about America being doomed under a Harris presidency, and she, you know, painting him as a fascist, a threat to women and a threat to democracy.
Well, both sides are quite negative. I mean, Donald Trump certainly is in a category by himself, using phrases like demonic. I mean, he has used this kind of language for as long as we can remember. Recall whenever he was, you know, elected during the inauguration, he talked about sort of an end to American carnage. Harris, you know, is still quite negative as well. I mean, she's cast Trump as a threat to democracy, an existential challenge to the Republic. But at the same time, she's paired that with sort of this idea of hope and joy. I don't know if those always kind of link together very well. But yeah, Americans say that they don't respond well to negativity, and yet they do. That's what the data suggests. And that's why we're hearing this from the candidates.
Yeah, and that's why I wondered how those messages play with, and it is with the undecideds, because, you know, there are locked in Republicans and locked in Democrats here, but it is that block of undecideds and how that negativity plays with them.
Well, actually, I'm not sure if it's all about the undecided voters. I think part of it really is about galvanizing the bases, simply because now there's a small and vanishing number of individuals who are truly on the fence. And when we look at the data, it seems to show that, you know, more moderate conservatives are leaning Republican, more moderate liberals are leaning Democrats. But I think we're really in this era of post-persuasion politics, where candidates really don't try to make overtures to the other side or on the fence voters. They really want to ensure that their bases are mobilized. And if their bases aren't mobilized, then it's really hard to win.
What will you be looking for tomorrow night as the hours inch into Wednesday morning and probably Thursday and Friday and beyond?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that we most likely won't get an outcome on election day. Remember back in 2020, election day was November 3rd. It wasn't until the 7th that the Associated Press eventually called the election for Biden. One of the reasons why it's hard to definitively name a winner is because of state-level differences in counting. In some states, absentee ballots can be counted in advance of election day. In others, counting can't begin until the morning of election day or after the polls close. But if there's one state that I would encourage your voters to pay, your listeners to pay attention to, would be Pennsylvania. A recent forecast showed that if Kamala Harris wins Pennsylvania, her odds of winning the White House go up to 91%. If Trump wins Pennsylvania, his odds of winning the White House go up to 96%. So it's such a bellwether. Pennsylvania is worth 19 electoral votes, and I think that it really could be dispositive of who wins.
Professor Gift, thank you very much for joining us.